recording.
Oh.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Wayward Podcast.
I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Kat.
Hey!
Hey, Kat's back!
Yes, it's actually... Oh, how long has it been since... Like, we had you on...
3 months or something?
Yeah, so I don't know if everyone... If, like... I don't know if we've gathered some new listeners or if everyone's heard, but if you want to reintroduce yourself...
What should I say?
Well, you are our friend Kat.
That's right, yes.
And what you... You are... Not a Japanese person.
Right. Exactly. That's like... So, like, my...
Oh, so professional we are.
Claim to fame would be being Sarah's BFF and not being Japanese. And in Tokyo, I... mostly during the day, I translate and interpret for a living. And at night, I do various... I party hard and work in bars.
And you used to work at Sony and... You got sick of the corporate?
Yeah. I think we talked about this in the episode I was on. I think maybe the episode was before that. I don't know, because I feel like I had just quit and I was really happy. So I think it was a bit 4 or 5 months ago or something, mm-hmm. like that, maybe a bit longer. Mm-hmm. But I worked there for about a year and then, I was really depressed and just tired of it. And maybe I just don't have any staying power when it comes to like full-time jobs. But I quit and now I'm freelance, so that's much better for my life.
I understand that perfectly. I used to work full-time in an office, almost killed myself, and mm-hmm. now I work freelance.
Mm-hmm.
And work part-time jobs and freelance. So.
Much happier person, and your friends and like girlfriends, boyfriends are much happier.
Yes.
About that.
Much more sunny disposition.
Right.
So, yes, freelance. Working from home, it's awesome. I mean, it's not... I won't say it's for everybody. I mean, some people, a full-time job is definitely more their style, but for me... Yeah.
I've got to say, like, I'm not actually... This year, the 2015, one of my resolutions was get up before 10 every day. And everybody who, like, gets up at 7 or 6 for work is like, fuck you. I got up at 7:15 today.
Yeah, that's right. And you were like...
Yeah, you're like messaging me going bye, and I was like, yeah, okay, good, bye. So, get up before 10 every day, and I actually have to, I don't know about you, Toshi, but I have to like leave the house if I want to achieve. If I've got like a project I'm working on, I usually take my computer, I take my laptop and go and work somewhere else.
Like in a cafe or something, yeah.
That I'm one of those people that like ambient noise actually helps me work.
Yeah,
the sound of people
and being at home, there are has its distractions
mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who like as I've mentioned on I think on like the last podcast, but I have a lot of manga illustrator friends, mm-hmm. and they go outdoors, work in cafes and stuff mm-hmm. like that to think of plots and stuff, and then they go back to their world.
So it's like the psychological aspect of not leaving the house all day. I mean, it is really cold in Tokyo right now.
Yeah,
it snowed the other day, which was kind of vaguely exciting. But
that's a rare.
Right, it's pretty rare. But it's so cold here that you really don't want to go outside, although the weather is kind of cold and clear, so it's nice. But not leaving the house all day and not getting dressed, that's kind of like, I feel like I'm failing at being an adult.
And TMI, but for girls, not putting a bra on is like committing to just being a homebody, living in your pajamas, well, swinging titties.
Yeah. Oh, gross.
Cow udders.
But like, Toshi came over and we're at my place. Tony's place.
We're at Tony's place. We found the spare key under the mat.
Yeah, so we just broke in. Tony was in that episode too, briefly.
Yes.
But he's on a business trip right now, so we decided to use the house. I mean, full disclosure, I do live here myself, so it's technically my house too. But it's a really nice big house, and it's really nice.
It is. It's a,
But it's cold.
By Japan standards, it is a very nice house.
Yeah, very, very. The only bad thing about this house is that the landlord lives right next door. And she's like this older... She's really nice, but I can't quite get the measure of her. She and I communicate, because Tony's Japanese is not that fluent, so... Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's another thing we mentioned previous, is that you're very good at Japanese and you're very proud of that. So.
Yeah, thanks. Well, But I think one of the reasons why she tolerates my living here is that I can communicate with her about stuff that goes wrong with the house or whatever. Mm. So we do talk, but she's so unreadable and like I can't tell if she likes me or not. And I can usually tell with people. I'm quite good at reading people, but with her, I don't know. It might have something to do with us coming home at like 4 or 5 in the morning every weekend. This is such a quiet neighborhood as well. Mm-hmm. So from when we're walking back, we always have to be like, shh, okay, be quiet from here, and then we'll walk up.
Blasting music. Yeah. And our scary movies on Sunday.
Mm. Yeah.
And so you've lived in Japan for, again, rehashing stuff?
I think in total it's about 7 years now, I think. Yeah. Because I went back to the UK a couple of times and then came back here. So this is the longest continuous stretch for me, which has been 5 years, I want to say. Yeah, something like that. 5 or 6, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, this is Kat. Welcome back. And hopefully more we'll be seeing much more of you.
Yay!
Well, on the podcast.
Anytime you frequently want me back, I will come.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Sarah, who is eating right now, so I guess I should...
I don't eat.
But is eating fruit right now. But what
has, I'm
what,
eating air.
What has been going on with you for the past few weeks?
Well, the movie that I mentioned in a previous podcast,
oh yes,
or 7, mm-hmm. that took us a while to finish, finally premiered. Mm-hmm. On Saturday.
Saturday. Yep. We are recording this a little late on Tuesday.
Yeah, a little
Tuesday,
late. Yeah. So. Yep. It's been a while. We played it at a small kind of art space / theater, basically just like a concrete building with a projection screen. And it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
It was great. Like, yeah. I got a really good reaction.
Yeah. And actually, we did 2 screenings, and actually the first screening, which Kat didn't go to,
I was getting dressed.
Yeah.
It takes probably 3 hours.
It got a much better reaction than the second one.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think it was kind of the first time I had seen it, so I was like howling, and that was that was making other people kind of go crazy. But I think a total about maybe 50 people saw it.
How large was the studio or
the space was probably held about 40 people, and then like so we had 2 showings, so like some people went out and maybe like half the theater stayed. So maybe in total it was 50 to 60 people who saw it, and it'll be up on YouTube or something.
Okay. Daily Motion. Do you have any specific news on that, or?
I don't know.
Okay.
Soon.
That's up to the director, I guess?
Yep. Okay. The 2 directors, Remiko and Yukiro.
Yeah.
Those are their performance names.
So when we have more information, yeah, we will bring that up.
The title is?
The title is The Bloody Knockers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in it too.
I was in.
Oh, were you?
yeah. Well, you know, remember the little people, okay? Cause, like, I was in 2 scenes as 2 or 3 scenes as 2 different characters. I was supposed to have this is like I'm forever gonna regret this, but I was supposed to have not to spoil the movie, but there's a rather saucy scene with Sarah. I was supposed to have a sex scene with Sarah, but. But I was in America at the time, so someone else had to. Another blonde girl had to shoot.
She's never going to listen to this, so I don't care, but it was not pleasant.
yeah.
Care to elaborate in detail?
okay, so it's not like a you can see anything sex scene. Mm. It's just like the camera pans away. Mm.
And you're, like, passionately kissing, yeah, kind of thing.
Well, we don't actually kiss. But, yeah, it was... We had to do so many takes because some of the people... So, the first person in the scene is American, so she was okay with her lines, but we had to do a couple takes. But then there were... So, like, people are... coming into the bed with us. And some of the people coming in did not speak English, so they're saying these lines just phonetically. And
the whole sort of don't really know the emotion, not really emoting.
There was this Japanese girl who, she was like adorable, like looked like a little doll, but she didn't speak English at all, and she was saying her lines completely phonetically. Like if someone had written katakana above her script lines, and just said them in a monotone, and it turned out to be actually really funny, like it was intended, because she sounds like a robot.
So. Yeah.
You will never get away with it.
That's exactly what it's like.
It's so
and just cute. Her like blinking
and just like, blinks at the camera,
and the audience was laughing like crazy.
So hard
I was like, "Well, that wasn't intentional," but yeah,
so. Everything's intentional.
Yeah.
Well, I think in a B movie like that, everything turned out to look intentional, so.
Yeah, so like the fight scene.
No. So funny. You guys should really watch it. Like, yeah. I was cracking up. It's, if you think of like, I don't know, the movies that are so bad they're good, this is definitely in that category.
Is this a party movie? Like, was this a movie you want to see with people?
Oh,
or
yes,
what?
For sure. Okay. Like, yeah, for
don't
sure.
Watch it
so,
alone.
Yeah.
About an hour long, and it actually, I was really impressed because, you know, if you're, as you guys all know if you've ever performed, but if you're in a movie, you don't actually know, unless you read the entire script, and obviously as an extra, I just read my own scenes and learned those parts, but you don't really see how it's going to come together until you actually watch the final thing. So I was really impressed with how the story arc actually made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it had a beginning, middle, end. There was tension. There was a conflict scene. Like, it made sense, and I really didn't think it was going to. So I was impressed. Yeah. It does stand up as a proper actual movie.
Right, yeah. So it was, I mean, there are definitely continuity errors. There's one that's so big and I was cringing. I'm not gonna say it because I don't want people to notice, but I was like, ooh.
Well, now people who watch the movie are going to be looking for it.
There's probably a lot more than one, but this one I was like, who cares?
Mm-hmm. It was good. I thought it was really good.
Mm. I looked really cool.
Yeah, you did.
Because I was wearing a wig.
You should wear that wig all the time.
I still have it.
I threw it out.
No, why did you do that? Because it was just in the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You were so brutal about throwing things away.
Well, it was actually kind of like messed up, too, because it was actually just like a 4,000 yen wig, which is like...
synthetic wigs get tangled super quickly.
Yeah, actually by the last shooting day, it was kind of matted and gross, but it was fine because it was supposed to look like I had been running.
Yeah.
So that was the bloody knockers. Mm. That was fun.
It will come up on YouTube eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully soon. So
soon, yeah.
We'll check it out with your friends.
Yep.
Lots of beers and enjoy.
Yes. We should make like a bloody knockers drinking game.
Yeah, that would be so funny.
Just like every time someone makes a reference to a vagina or boobs. So it's like a sexploitation movie, but it's like a parody of sexploitation movies. Because it's based on Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
No. It's definitely worth it to watch it.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre, and it's supposed to be very, like, anti-feminism in, like, the early, early years of feminism, like the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out to be a really feminist movie.
Yeah.
And so my look in the movie is supposed to be kind of based on... My look in the character is supposed to be based on the character in the movie. Mm-hmm. We even have a member of our gang who doesn't really speak English.
Mm-hmm.
She has, like... She's French. The actress is French. But she has, like, this really exaggerated, like, French and Brazilian accent.
Yes. I didn't realize she was putting it on.
Yeah, her English is a little bit better than that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, quite a bit better than that.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, she's Brazilian French.
Oh, okay.
So she was, like, born in Brazil.
Oh, okay.
Speaks Portuguese and is also French.
Mm.
So it's like a mishmash. But anyway, it was fun.
Mm.
I want to do another one.
They did. They were talking about the sequel at the premiere when the next one. I was like, okay, let's do it.
The Bloody Knockers 2. Yeah. Yeah.
So
what's new in Toshi's life?
Not all that much. Let's see. I went and saw, what is it? Big Hero 6 again.
Again?
Yes, but this time I actually saw it, not subbed, but dubbed. Because I saw it at the 4DX theater. Have you heard of these?
No.
It's kind of like, what are those called again? Where the seats? rumble seats sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. The Ford, what did they call it? Like the 4D experience.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, I forget the specific term. They have like one of those actually in Austin. I think there's one in California.
It's not IMAX, is it?
No, generally not. But I'm not sure, actually. But there are some seats that, like, they basically vibrate in tandem with the movie, depending on...
I think I've tried. I sat in one once. Sample.
It's kind of like a rumble seat. But not only that, but they also have things where, like, at specific scenes, like when something's whooshing by you, it'll have air spray
water jets. Yeah, spray on your face.
They have smoke machines, mm-hmm. they have bubbles, mm-hmm. things like that. So it's kind of like, I don't know if anyone who's been... I don't know if they have this in the American Disneyland, but Mickey's PhilharMagic. I think it's called. They have something very similar to that, which is basically like they have like water spraying and things like that in tandem with them.
Guys, you're asking the wrong people.
Sorry.
We both just looked at each other I don't know anything. Do you like Disney, Toshi?
I'm turning around a bit on it. I used to be very anti-Disney.
I bet it's because your girlfriend likes it.
Yes.
Right. Oh, I knew it.
Yeah, well, it's also like I went there to Disneyland with her and I kind of got infected. I had the sickness.
Right.
So.
I see. I mean, sorry to interrupt you, but like I always have a good time, but it's mostly because I'm with other people that also don't like Disney and we're like, they're going,
ironic.
Fuck this place, man. Like, but it's okay. Like, I mean, I like roller coasters, and also the thing about Disney is that the roller coasters are like perfect for me because they're not too intense. Because I got scarred by going to Fuji Q Highland.
Oh yes,
It's for everybody who doesn't know. Fuji Q is a theme park near Mount Fuji. I think it's in Shizuoka.
Yes,
isn't it? Shizuoka Ken.
Nobody knows where that is.
Nobody knows
it's near Fuji. It's near Mount Fuji.
You get an amazing view of Mount Fuji from it. It's beautiful. It's like if you go in the winter, it's super clear. But the thing with this place is that there are no, in Disney, there's like, and even other theme parks, there are always like wuss out rides that people who aren't that good with roller coasters can go on. At Fuji Q, there is no soft option. Like you are, it's either like insane terror or insane terror. Like you can't. So I think
there's one I've been on that was mild.
There's Pika-chan House, which is the equivalent of like Barbie's house that I went in and just stayed there for an hour.
Well, I think they have one ride where I think was like mild. It wasn't as like breakneck as any others, and they have a Ferris wheel.
I did go on about six times,
which I actually can't do.
No, really?
I can do all those crazy roller coasters and stuff. I cannot do Ferris wheels. I think because they're moving so slow and they take so long. Huh. And roller coasters are like,
it's not the height thing; it's just the pace.
It's the pace and like. I could probably ride almost any roller coaster because they're so short.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's the crawl up to the first.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, I love that too.
I love it.
It's two on one this way.
Yeah. I hate, like, I worry a lot and I'm like quite an A-type in that I overthink everything. So that gives you way too much time to think about what's going to happen.
But doesn't like a Ferris wheel make you do the same thing?
But it's so slow. Like it's not, and I'm not going up like to the top of a massively high hill and then going down at a massively high speed from a really steep angle. It's like just going la 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 round round and just look at the scenery. I mean,
it's just
like
a vertical merry-go-round.
Yeah, right. It's not scary.
For me, I'm afraid the Ferris wheel is just going to like break and I'll be stuck up there forever.
Oh, okay. That part.
No, I'd just be stuck up there forever and I'd have to climb down.
Well, that would be it.
That's why you always travel with your grappling hook.
Right.
Like, be prepared. But yeah, so Disney, the thing with Disney is the like Thunder Mountain and Splash Mountain and stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are about okay for me. Because the thing is, I used to be really into roller coasters. But then one time I went to Fuji Q when I was about 19, when I was on study abroad here, with a bunch of like girlfriends. We were all just like screaming, running into the park, going, yeah! And then we ran and queued for the first coaster that we saw without looking at what it was. We were just like, we're gonna ride everything, yeah. So we got to the head of the queue and we were so busy, you know, like girls like talking, we were so busy talking we didn't know what it was. And then we got to like almost being placed into the seats and I saw this sign that was like, highest roller coaster in the world 2004. And I was like, oh my god, you guys, it's this thing called King of Coasters Fujiyama.
Yep.
And it did have the world record for the highest coaster until somewhere in America beat it, like, a year later. But
they're so competitive.
77 meters high.
Yep.
I don't know what that is in feet. Very high.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
It is pretty high.
It's extremely high. And, oh my god, it wasn't
even fun terror. It was just terror. And I got off and basically skipped to the end, and I was, like, pulling up to get off. And it was only about a 2-minute ride or something, but I was crying real tears of terror. Oh my and these God. High school students who are Japanese kids were waiting to get on. And one of them turns to another one and goes, "Should we just not go on this?" Like, in Japanese, because they looked at my face, and then they were like, This is maybe too much. And the friend was like, no, it's fine, it's fine. And I was like, don't go on it. So ever since then, I've never been able to ride. Probably because what I should have done is immediately queued up and gone on it again. Like, get back on the horse, right? But no, I was just traumatized.
But wasn't the line really long?
It was. It was like 2 hours and we never even... That's why this story is so stupid. Because I had so many times that I could have been like, nah, I'm going to get off this coaster. But no, I was too stupid.
I did that... I can't remember the name of the coaster, but it was in Canada's Wonderland, which is near Toronto. I don't remember what coaster it was. I don't even think it was like the worst one. But the first time I went there, got right up to the front. Right up to, like, where you're supposed to go on the car or the whatever. And I just was like, nope. And turn around, and people were booing me.
How long did you queue for?
I don't know, an hour. It wasn't that bad because it was like a weekday in April. Then
I respect that decision.
Over the summer, I went with my family, and my brother and I were in line. My brother is a type of person. He is a man of few words. We waited in line for like 2 hours. He didn't say a word to me. So I was just like waiting, and I was like, I know I chickened out last time, but I gotta put on the strong face.
I got this, yeah.
I gotta impress my brother. Yeah. We got on, we like click the safety thing in place. It was one of those like your legs are free
sort of thing.
The sort of dangling, half dangling thing.
And I was like, I didn't even get to this point last time. Fuck, I want to get off so bad. I look over my brother, his face, he's like just facing forward, completely neutral expression on his face. The ride starts moving, we go, it was awesome. We get off, and I was like, I had been screaming. I was screaming the whole time. Right. We get off.
Screaming of joy, fear, or...
Joy. Okay. My brother didn't make a sound. We get off, and my brother goes, oh, that was pretty good. So, I think if you had gone with my brother, you probably would have been like, gotta be cool.
I do have to look cool in front of boys. So, yeah, what were we talking about? We're talking about Disney.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I like the coasters at Disney, so that's one of the reasons why I like it. The other reason I like it in Japan is you can drink at Disney Sea.
Yes.
Just drink really overpriced beer until everything becomes fun.
Yeah. But,
that's right, a coaster.
I think I enjoy it more because I can look at it from a service side. I mean, I know the sort of corporate background, like, you know, the way stuff is designed, I can see that, but because I can see it, it doesn't really affect me that much.
Right.
But I can
engineer it to be fun. Right.
Yeah,
right.
I can see it, but I also, like, for me, it's not, I mean, it is manipulative, yes, but I kind of feel like there is at least some heart behind it. Like the people who work there, they have pride in what they're doing,
and they
are very proud of helping people and, you know, showing people a good time. And there's that famous story about some lady who, like, you know, they lost their family who lost their child, and they went to Disneyland sort of in memory of that child, and then like the service people basically pretended that the child was there.
Oh
for
my
them.
God!
Oh
and
my God! Like, I just got goose pimples. I don't know.
Why it was cute. Well,
they like, you know, they offered her a seat, and like, you know, they got a placement for her child who wasn't there. And
no,
just, like,
I don't know if that's good or not.
Well, I mean, Disney is a good company. It's a good company to work for. Mm. They're very big on diversity and like equal
benefits,
hire.
Benefits
yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, they're also a corporation.
Oh,
so there's, I mean, it still has those parts in it. And
I find
they're about
creepy,
making money.
Like, I find, because, you know, you read these, the articles I will always click on are the ones that's like behind the scenes at Disney, what you actually have to do. And obviously, the rules are incredibly strict for employees, you know. And in Tokyo, you often, if you go out and, you know, clubbing or dancing or whatever, you meet Disney dancers.
That?
I don't know. But I hear that you meet people who work at Disney. Like, they get shipped over from, like, Australia, America, whatever.
Because, like, a lot of the characters are Caucasian,
well,
or
the, all of them, right?
They're not so, Asian.
Exactly. So all the characters at Tokyo Disney are white people mostly, right? So we knew a couple of people who were dancers there, and they are just like the most upbeat, cheerful, happy people, and you just want to slap them. You're just like, oh my god, what are you? You're just
and they're
like,
all beautiful.
And they're ridiculously good looking. And they're incredible dancers, and you know, they've been dancing since they were 3 or 4 years old, and they come from like professional dance academies. I knew this one girl who, she played Alice in Wonderland and Tinkerbell.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she beat out 3,000 other girls for that part.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. For that, for, I read an article about her because I'm a stalker.
She's a person who basically walks around the park as a character or and shows up on the parade.
She does both, yeah. But she walks around the park and talks to little kids and stuff. And she apparently they auditioned like 3,000 girls and they picked her.
Wow. And like for Tokyo Disney, they do the auditions in Australia, mm-hmm. and people come from all over the world to audition.
Yeah.
It's
a flight from the UK to Australia is a serious business. I mean, that's a 24-hour flight.
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money, and you know, for an audition.
Yeah.
Wow.
That you know, you're not sure you're going
to
get.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I was born to be Cinderella.
Yeah. I mean, do you know how many they have? Like, because they can't just have one.
No, I have no idea. But I'm sure, I mean, obviously, they must have days off, unless they love Disney so much, they're like, I'll work every day.
I wouldn't be surprised, but...
Because the parks open about 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so,
nine
yeah.
9 to 9.
But it's only certain characters are only on at certain times.
Yeah,
right?
And, like, I think it's... I'm not sure if it still applies, but apparently, like, Mickey will only show up... Like, he won't show up in two places at the same time.
That asshole.
They actually... Well, like, the character of Mickey, like, he will only... Like, he won't show up in two places at the same time in the world.
Oh, my God.
They have it coordinated, so, like...
See, what, that's creepy. Yeah, that's what I find so creepy about that company. I'm just like,
who
planned this stuff?
Well, because, it, like, he, you know, the character... It's, you know, he's the king of the dream world sort of thing. Like, you know,
the king of the dream
you
world.
You drank the Kool-Aid so badly.
Yeah, well, no, I'm saying that a little ironically. I mean, I'm not... Okay. I've got one foot in the pond. I know that. But I'm aware of it. At least I'm self-aware.
I was going to say, the reason why we kind of guessed that Toshi was like... Oh, he's like, oh, yeah, I didn't used to like Disney, but now I do. And it's like, because all Japanese girls like Disney. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, if you don't, then your citizenship is revoked. That's what I heard. Ministry of Justice is like, sorry... You have to. You don't own at least one Mickey or Minnie Mouse item. You're not Japanese.
And the thing is, like, it's not the Disney princesses thing. Because, like, in the U.S., in the U.K.
There's a cat tripping over your computer.
Sorry, yeah, Tony's cat, Nico, is now... Yeah, he's now on the podcast. He's a Bengal, and he's pretty big, and he's, like,
curious, intrigued
by all the wires and stuff. So he's, like, walking around amongst the equipment.
Exploring
everything.
So if there's a sudden random accident and the podcast just cuts out.
He's looking for that mouse. But anyway, in the West, it's like nostalgia for the Disney princesses thing that's kind of gotten popular. But here it's all about Mickey and Minnie Mouse. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what is Mickey's character? Can anybody, like, what is he?
I mean, yeah.
Other than the
cartoons were, like, what, in the 30s.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were ever shown here. I don't...
Well, I mean, none of the classics, I doubt it.
I mean, it's all merchandising, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Like, before every Disney cartoon movie or any Disney animated movie, they'll have that thing with Steamboat Willie, that sort of, you know, Walt Disney thing.
Yeah. Right.
The real thing of him spinning the wheel, that whistling. Yeah. But I wonder, like, how many Japanese people have actually seen Steamboat Willie?
So, if you can hear a clicking noise, it's the cat playing viciously with his toy.
He's like, pay attention to me.
Yeah, Chris, you're not the only podcast with a cat on.
Yeah. But what I find really interesting about it is how, as you say, like, different aspects of Disney are popular here in Asia than they are in the US and UK, whatever. Because, yeah, I mean, most girls our age, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I like classic Disney, as in, you know, classic meaning in the 70s and 80s, like Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, all that stuff, from back in the 50s and stuff. But here, it's almost exclusively Mickey, Minnie, Donald Duck, Daisy Duck, the Aristocats, the characters from the Aristocats, super popular.
And Lilo and Stitch.
Yes, Lilo and Stitch.
Lilo and Stitch had, Lilo and Stitch had, like, several spin-offs. Strictly for Japan in many cases.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
So
yeah,
and yeah, Disney has permeated the culture in a lot of ways.
Really annoys me. Can I just like say something that is? I've been trying to. Oh man, God, this annoys me.
Someone's been pent up. Go ahead.
Really annoys me. Whenever Kat talks about something that annoys her, I'm just like, yes, tell me more.
Okay, so. In Japan, this character was invented for the Japanese market. It is a toy that Mickey and Minnie have. That bear. What is it called?
Oh, right, the bear. Yeah, that was what I don't remember, but that was one character like I'd never heard of. I was like, who? Like,
yeah,
and
Google that shit.
But like,
that thing needs to die. Like, it's like, okay, so there's this thing was created purely for merchandising, and it is so cynical. It's such a cynical manipulation of what. Like, Japanese girls think it's cute. It's a teddy bear that's kind of animated, but it's also, like, Mickey and Minnie's, like, toy. So you're buying merchandise of a thing that never had a backstory.
Yeah.
And that has no character. It's a stuffed bear that it belongs to a fake mouse. What the hell? Oh, I hate it so much. Like, seriously, I can't think of anything worse than being stuck in the Disney store for 3 hours. Oh, my God.
It's not this.
What's it called? Is it Duncan?
Does not ring a bell. I've heard the character's name.
Teddy Duncan. No, who's that? But Mickey's toy Teddy or something.
Mickey.
Well, pardon the podcast Teddy. While we Google a moment here.
Hang on a sec. No, see, it doesn't exist in English. You're going to have to search it in Japanese. No, Duffy. I just remembered.
There, yeah. Duffy. Okay, that rings a bell, so yes.
Duffy in Japanese, right?
Yeah.
So,
I'd never heard of the character.
Insanely popular, right? Yep. And, oh, every time I see merchandise of it hanging off some girl's bag, I just want to, like, tear it off and stamp on it. I mean, it's just, and I don't particularly like teddy bears anyway. I think they're creepy, but, yeah, there it is.
If you Google just Duffy, teddy bear.
The Disney bear. I mean, maybe it exists in America too now. I don't know. But look, there's a female and a male version.
Yes,
like, it's gone even deeper. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
The horror. Duffy the Disney bear. Why? Just why? Oh, God.
And, if you look at its paw, what do you see?
It's a mouse face.
Yeah, it's got
the hidden Mickey thing.
Yep. Like, that's another thing.
Have you done that at Disney? Gone looking for the hidden Mickey symbols, like all over Disney, Tokyo Disney?
No.
It's like the Illuminati.
Yeah.
It's like the Da Vinci.
But I know they're everywhere, yep.
Yeah. So you get people like staring really hard at a paving stone going, is that Mickey face or not? I can't tell. And then more people gather because, you know, everyone loves a crowd. Yeah. Everyone's just looking at it. I'm like, this is the stupidest thing that's ever happened.
So anyways, on Disney, I went to see Big Hero 6 again for the second time.
Big Hero 6?
Yeah. What's it's that? It's the title in Japanese is Baymax. It's the
Baymax,
one about...
Baymax, is it an anime?
Yeah, it's a CG animated.
Oh, okay.
It's actually pretty Disney. Good. It is, yeah, it is... Their latest, I think. I think it's up for an Oscar when the Lego movie is not. That's bullshit. But anyways.
It's not?
Yeah, Lego movies got snubbed.
I never saw Lego movie. I
think it's really good.
Maybe I'll watch that tonight. Big Hero 6. Oh, it's so kawaii. I want to see it.
It is adorable.
Oh, I saw the trailer for that. Yes.
And the trailers are a lie. So let me just say that.
Okay. Alright, fine. I won't watch it.
But, no, the trailers focus a lot more on the sentimental sort of family sort of thing when it's more than that. It's more of an adventure movie. But I saw it, like I said, second time, this time in, dubbed, not subbed, because the 4DX movies, the 4DX theater only does dubs, it looks like.
You mean dubbed into Japanese?
Yes.
That's always a fun experience.
And it was actually interesting. I mean, it wasn't that horrifying.
Cartoons are usually, animations are usually better.
Yeah. And they actually did a very good job. Mm-hmm. Disney translations, I think, are like a rank above
in most really cases.
They're they really put a lot of money into getting these things right.
I mean, sorry to talk about myself again, but I actually did my master's thesis on subtitling into Japanese and dubbing into Japanese all of Western movies. Mm-hmm. And you're right, in the animation gets a much higher.
Yeah.
Actually, their subtitling is usually quite slapdash because they assume that not many kids are going to want to watch a subtitled movie because, you know, kids can't read kanji until they're a bit older, right?
Yeah, so I mean...
They put a lot of effort into the dubbing.
I think Japan is one of the few countries where dubbing is more popular than
That's right. Partly because of the literacy required to read subtitles in your native language in Japanese. Yeah. Chinese is another one where dubbing is super popular because little kids can't read, right?
So, yes.
Yeah. Sorry for the diversion. How was it? Was it good?
It was good, actually. actually. It was, like I said, the dubbing was, it was not distracting like I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really got into the movie again. A lot of fun. And the 4DX was a very fun experience.
Where was that? Where is that?
It's in Toyosu. It's,
oh, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know where I'm talking about.
I saw that at the, it's near Akiha, isn't it? Shinkiba? It's a couple stops away.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's at the United Theater.
It's on the Yurakucho.
Yurakucho.
Yeah, it's near the ocean, I think.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. Speaking of going a little bit off topic, but another movie I saw was Taken 3, which is I think it's
so out of the loop with
me. No, it's a movie. The original movie was called Taken. It featured Liam Neeson as an action hero, which was kind of hot. And
was he someone's dad?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, you haven't seen Taken?
It's actually really good.
Yeah,
it is actually it's surprisingly good.
He turns me off so.
No, but he's good in it.
Like, I mean, he's not all that sexy or all, but he's like a hardcore action hero.
Like, I want him to be my dad.
Yeah.
It's that line.
Sorry, dad.
It's that line where, you know, he's on the phone. And he's like, I have a very
specific set of skills. Yeah. People, skills that make me a nightmare for someone like people like you. Like, if you let my daughter go, I will.
I'm going to add this. I have an iPhone note that, movies I need to watch. I'm going to add these two.
Yeah. Taken is really, really good.
So there's three of them then.
Yes. That's the thing. Like, they went, like, because it was really successful. It was a surprise hit.
Okay.
Like, I think it was one of those movies that came out, like, at the end of the summer. Like, there was like more they like kind of like put the leftovers,
right? They just threw it in there,
and it just like was everyone was like, whoa, what the fuck is this? It was really good. And so they slapped out two sequels, and I think it's one of the most unfortunately titled movies ever, because Taken 2, like, okay, so the original premise of Taken is that his daughter gets kidnapped. Mm-hmm. That's what it's Taken.
I think I saw the trailer for that, actually.
Yeah. You probably did. Mm-hmm. Taken 2 is they switched it around, so this time the parents are kidnapped and the girl's got to save, which does not work at all. It really does not
actually
work.
She's just a dumb teenager.
Yay, yeah. Mom and dad are away.
And so, like, she's got to save them, but she obviously doesn't have that specific set of skills. And so, like, he has
is
to,
he,
like, guide her.
Is he, like, psychic or something? Or are you?
It is.
He's, like, a former CIA agent.
Yeah, he's, like, he's a former, like, I don't know, Green Beret or something, but like he's like a really special ops guy.
He's just Irish.
Oh, okay.
he's Batman's teacher. He's Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
But Taken 3, nobody gets taken. So like, why is it still called Taken? And even worsely, going back into translation, the Japanese translation of this series was, it's called Kyuju Rokujikan. It's 96 hours. Why is it called that?
It relates to 24, right?
No, it's actually, it's because the first movie, his daughter gets taken, and one of his friends says, like, you have a window of about 96 hours.
About.
But yeah. And after that, you're not going to find
it. They should have called it Yaku Kyuju Rokujikan. About 96 hours.
Well, it's like the way it looks, like, you have 96 hours to find her. If not, she's gone. You'll never find her again.
Why?
So, like, well, like...
That's the rule.
It's so arbitrary.
It's kind of arbitrary. Like, you know...
telling me about
that. Well, he says, basically, the trail's gonna go cold. She could, like, you know, they'll have shipped her off. You're gonna lose her.
What's the point of... Why... Are they kidnapping her for a ransom?
Or yeah.
No. They're kidnapping her... what is it?
To sell her into prostitution.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like, Middle Eastern...
Yeah.
Dudes. So, like...
Terrorists.
It's like... Like Bulgarian or Estonian or something
like that. Some
guys.
Middle Eastern. They don't really say specifically, right.
Yeah.
But the thing, the 96 hours thing was completely offhand. Like even in the original movie, like I'm saying, like the way I look at it, you've got about 96 hours to get her. You know, basically it's like you gotta hurry up and get her.
Right.
But the Japanese
you picked up on that.
The Japanese, when they made the title of the movie, like they couldn't call it just Taken for some reason. I don't know why. But so they lashed on the 96 hours. Unfortunately, neither of the sequels have anything to do with 96 hours. Like, why do you call this 96 hours?
They got locked in, didn't they?
Yeah, it was most like the translated title, the Japanese title, was so unfortunate.
I find that maybe we've talked about this before, but if you read everybody out there who reads a second language, when you go and see movies that are subtitled in your second language, you can't not read the subtitles.
Yeah.
Like, so I heard someone said to me the other day, they didn't mind when it was in a language they could read, but they did mind when it was in a language they couldn't. Like, so for example, for me, Chinese is kind of distracting because you keep seeing characters you kind of know.
But if it's like in Cyrillic,
then I don't care.
Yeah.
I just look at it as like patterns on the screen, so I don't mind about that at all.
Yeah. But
the Japanese, like,
always compare.
Yeah, it's like, have they got, oh, okay, I see why they chanted like that.
Yeah, so like we saw The Hobbit 3.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
That translation was not bad, actually.
Yeah.
That's told out, usually the Lord of the Rings movies and probably The Hobbit are translated by this woman called Tilda Natsuko. She's like, the most famous translator.
Oh God, she's
terrible, man.
Is she?
I've mentioned this on the podcast. Like, has done a lot
of. She did the Harry Potter ones, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think she did the.
Did she not?
I know she does. Like, I've mentioned this on the podcast.
She gets all the big series.
She gets all Tom. She's a personal friend of Tom Cruise. She always gets his movies. So like, was it
Mission Impossible?
All the Mission Impossibles, of course. Most recent was last year, the Tom Cruise Time Loop one. All You Need Is Kill is the Japanese title. The American title, they've actually changed it.
Oh, that was that weird one that was actually based on a Japanese
Japanese short novel.
Right,
light
All
novel.
You Need Is Kill. Konoha title.
Seriously. Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow. But they changed that. They changed that to in the video release. It's called like Live, Die, Repeat or something like that.
Oh, that's a cool title. Right.
But there's actually a picture of her like on set with Tom Cruise, and she's wearing the exosuit that he's wearing. God.
I mean, I've been to one of her lectures, and
she's a celebrity.
She is. Yeah, she's like a celebrity. So amongst the translating community, and especially among like interpreters here, you say her name and people just like roll their eyes because they're like, she is a bad interpreter and she's also a bad subtitler.
Yeah.
But she gets all this work because she basically goes off on her own. She thinks it should be this in Japanese, so she like changes the script incredibly. She changes the script in ways that you shouldn't if you're a translator.
Yeah, and the thing is that because most people, like your average, I'm gonna go something random to a quote from George Carlin, but he always said like, think of how dumb the average person is, and remember that half of them are dumber than that. So, like most Japanese people. Don't know English at all.
Yeah, right.
So, like, they won't understand what she's fucked up.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why she's so popular,
right.
Is because she gets a lot of big titles,
right.
And so she's very outspoken, right, she like goes on TV shows, gets interviews, all
what
that stuff.
What I don't like about her is that she relies on cliches so heavily. So apparently she did translate the Harry Potter series. And the Night at the Museum, James, she's famous for all the James Bond movies. What else did she do?
She did Titanic.
She did American Beauty, yep. I'm pretty sure. Because I used that as one of the movies I sort of analyzed in my thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And she did the classic Battleship. What the hell is that? Based on the board game.
Oh God. The Michael Bay studio.
With the great line, and Kat, maybe you can help me translate it. You sunk my battleship.
I'm not even...
Translate.
No, that. I'm not. But like, yeah, so what I don't like about her subtitles is that they're like really cliche-ridden in Japanese. You know, she'll just rely on the easiest translation. I saw a lecture of hers where she was explaining her technique, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she did say... She said, I mean, which is kind of a fair point. She was like, I always use the most simple translation. The most simple, you should always simplify down. And I'm like, I think you should give the audience more benefit of the doubt because you're dumbing this stuff down. Even action movies that are dumb already, you're dumbing them down even further.
Yeah.
And she's like, people don't go to the movies to read. And I'm like, look, Japanese audiences have the choice between dubbed and subbed. If they're choosing subbed, they're there to read. Like, they know they're going to read. So I don't know. I don't really agree with her style at all.
I can understand, like, it's a very delicate balance, I believe.
And
like,
you don't have a lot of room, I think.
Like how many, there is a specific set, like
12 and 12, it's like 12 Japanese characters for each line or something.
Yeah, and like how many, and like how long you can show it on
like
the screen.
2 seconds.
Like, you have to calculate, there's a basically rule of thumb, like how many characters someone can read, average person can read in.
It's really difficult. I mean, translating for screen is really hard, and she's been doing it, and she was one of the first women to ever do it in Japan, so. Yeah.
We've got a cat on the table, but...
The cat's on the table! He's like, you're too serious. Let's talk about me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, that's so cute. I love when they pick things up in their mouth.
He picked up the little twisty seal.
Oh, God, we're talking about...
He's taking it to his lawyer. He's got literally like a million toys and he just plays with that stuff instead. But yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, let's get back on track. The cat was distracting.
So we saw The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
3.
Mm.
And
I actually really enjoyed it. I know we had kind of different
opinions. I thought it was really silly, but I was entertained. It didn't feel like 2 hours and 45 minutes or whatever it was.
I was really worried going in because we went to see it in the evening, and we'd both like been working that day, and we're both pretty tired. And then I was like, oh, man, I'm going to fall asleep. I did fall asleep really briefly. I always do that. And like the height of the action sequence, I usually pass out for like 10 minutes and then wake up again. I don't know why. But I thought it was good.
And it was worth it.
Highly entertaining.
For Thranduil.
Oh my god.
So Toshi, you haven't seen it yet, right?
No, I haven't.
But you've seen the other two.
Yes.
And you know Thranduil.
Yes, the wood elf king sort of.
With the amazing hair.
Yeah.
Seriously, what does he use on his hair? Because it's amazing.
So so from my point of view, the plot of this movie was Thorin wants his disco ball.
The Arkenstone.
Which he's keeping in this really exclusive club. Like, it's really big, but only like
called Erebor, and you can only get in if you're really hot.
Only like 13 people can get in.
Yeah.
And
if you could get in if you're really hot, then all the elves would be getting in.
Oh, well, okay, this is the thing. So last time Thranduil went there, he left his necklace.
He left his necklace. He got really wasted and left his necklace in the bathroom.
Yeah. Because it was bothering him.
He just needed to be free.
He just needed to be
free. It was like a super fabulous heavy necklace.
Yeah, he's like, I love this necklace, but it's like really
heavy. I just
need
to be like, just free of it right now. Yeah. So he took it off.
He left it in the bathroom. And he called up Thorin and was like, I left my necklace in the bathroom. And Thorin's like, fuck you. I hate you. You're such a stuck-up fucking bitch. All you do is come to our club, you go to the bathroom, take selfies for like an hour.
And then sit in VIP and don't talk to anyone for like 3 hours.
And you won't even let Elrond in. He's cool.
Elrond half elven isn't allowed in the club because he's not got the nicest hair.
Question, like, was Elrond in any of those movies?
Yeah, he was.
Okay, really, so Hugo Weaving the show,
he was. He's in the third one.
Okay, because I was curious if Hugo
Weaving... I think he was in the first one, but not the second one.
Okay, I was curious if Hugo Weaving would show up, so...
He did,
yeah. Yeah, he was in the first one Gandalf was like...
Right. And he was checking out...
And Saruman was like, there's no such thing as a thing.
Yeah, he was the one who was telling them the names of the swords. Okay, I remember.
Yeah. So Elrond can't come into the club.
Mm-hmm.
And Thranduil leaves his necklace behind.
Yeah.
And Thorin's like, no, you're not getting it back. So then Thranduil's like, fine, I'm going to bring my bitches. I'm going to come take it back.
So
we have the Battle of the Five Ones.
Yeah. And Legolas was like, Dad,
I'm so embarrassed right now.
You're so embarrassing.
Could you stop? Because, like, it's not always about you, okay?
Yeah. And
that's the plot
of the Hobbit.
That's the plot.
3.
That's how I saw the movie.
Hobbit 3
really entertaining though. Like,
yeah,
the fight sequences were really like spectacular.
My favorite scene was when Billy Connolly came in riding on a pig. I don't know what his character's name was, but I'm gonna just say it was Billy Connolly.
He's a cousin. Dane, he's the cousin of Thorin.
Or it was just Billy Connolly.
It was just Billy Connolly.
On a pig.
And I was like, as a Scottish person, I'm sitting there going, for God's sake. But then I realized that, wait, it's not a stereotype. It is actually just Billy Connolly. He's like that all the time. He talks like that all the time. He wasn't putting an accent on. That is how he talks.
Yeah.
And he does ride a pig.
He does. He rides a pig through Glasgow. Everyone knows that.
Isn't it on your coins?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a limited edition 2011 coin that was really rare. Instead of the queen, it was Billy Connolly on a pig. But at the minute the pig showed up, Sarah and I were both like, kawaii, at the same time. We're like, that's so adorable.
Because I have this thing that I really want a potbelly pig.
We asked Tony if we could get one for the house, but he said no.
He said we could get a pig if... Mm-hmm. It wears little socks.
That was the issue. What? So
wait,
the
no.
Like scratched up?
Yep.
Okay.
But the socks have to have pictures of Norman Reedus on it.
Did Tony actually say that,
yes,
or did
he
you
did.
Say
that?
This sounds like something Sarah would say.
It does. I think Sarah just like made a little face with her hand and was like, I'm Tony, this is what I say.
I think Tony in Taipei on his business trip right now, he just got like a cold shudder and he's like, they're talking about me.
Yeah. I am going to get a potbelly pig.
They are so cute, but they don't they grow massive?
Not really. You get the miniature ones.
Get one. Yeah. You'd have to have more grazing space for it though.
Nah, it's fine. Do they eat grass? No.
No, they eat anything.
Yeah.
According to Hannibal, they eat human flesh.
Yes, they do. They will, yeah. That's something that shows up in movies that, like, yeah. Yep.
Well, I mean, people will eat human flesh, too, so.
Yeah. If they're desperate, right?
Yeah.
Why did we start talking about this? No,
I want a pot belly pig, and okay. I'm going to name it Oliver.
Okay, you can have one. If it's computer generated, it's, like the one in the movie.
It's going to ride
so
in
when,
the bitch seat
so when
of
Tony
my motorcycle.
Comes back, so when Tony comes back, there's going to be...
I don't know if the cat would like that, Nico. Nico, he's back on the table.
No, you're not going to take
so
another one.
The other one. Yeah, sorry, Toshi, that little wire tie is now his.
Okay,
he's like, can I take the other one too? He's like steadily taking wire ties and taking them into the corner of the room and just like killing them.
So cute. So,
what were we talking about?
We were talking about the Battle of the Five Armors, which I haven't seen because, yeah. I don't know, I haven't been, for some reason, like, I mean, I was really excited for the original Lord of the Rings, but for this time around with The Hobbit, I think it's because it's got stretched out so much, I just, like, I haven't been that excited.
So many people have said that, and I totally agree, given that The Hobbit, I was never that fussed about The Lord of the Rings. It was one of those books that I saw the original, The Fellowship of the Ring. Okay, this is so weird. For someone who just said, I'm not that fussed about it. I saw the movie 12 times at the cinema.
But you're totally not into
the reason for which was that I had these two friends at the time, and we would just, like, basically MSTK it, right? And before, because we were in the UK, we didn't even know what MSTK was. I can't even say it properly.
MST3K.
MST3K. All right. Just find it on the internet. But like, we would go and see it, and we had this whole script that we'd like made up, and we would go and see the matinees at like 3 p.m. We'd get out of school early on a Friday and go and see it and get these super cheap tickets. And we'd just sit there and like make fun of it and like make up homoerotic relationships between the characters and
which is what we kind of did in The Hobbit 3.
Yeah, we did.
There was a part where Bard and Legolas were just like talking.
They were just on the screen together. We were like, yeah. They were so into each other.
But they were like one of them would turn to the other and the other would turn away. Like, no, we mustn't.
Eye fucking each other pretty much.
Not really, but they
couldn't look at each other.
They couldn't look at each other because they were just both too beautiful. And we were like, looking at this scene, I was thinking, wow, just based on this scene, there is going to be reams and reams of fanfiction written about it. I was like, good. I'd be like, they were totally into each other. Oh my god. But yeah, we've good. So I went to see The Fellowship of the Ring 12 times. I paid 12 times to see that film.
Matinee, but not.
Right, matinee. So not the full ticket price. I'm not crazy.
No,
But yeah, and then I kind of, I was like, eh. But the book had never really grabbed me. I read it when I was, I tried when I was 12. I was too young, couldn't get through it. Tried again, got through it when I was about 15. But I was like, I really didn't like, I don't like fantasy. So, but The Hobbit, my dad read to me when I was little. You know, in chapters kind of thing, and it has, I love that book. I think it's a better book. You know, it's a controversial opinion. Tony's gonna hate that.
Tony's gonna be like, the Silmarillion is the superior.
Tony is a Lord of the Rings purist and thinks that, like, read the Silmarillion and all that other shit that no one ever reads.
Where's my Silmarillion movie? That would be like 5 movies.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't even know what the Silmarillion's about.
Is it not about Tom Bombadil?
He's in it, I believe.
Is it not a creation myth or something? Like, how do I know this, Jack?
You know more than better than I do.
Seriously, but I think it explains how Middle-earth came to be or something. It's like a creation story. I'm not sure, though.
It's kind of background lore of it. Right. I mean, wasn't the original Lord of the Rings just like, something that Tolkien wrote to talk about, like, language, like the elven language.
Well, it was a vehicle for the languages he made up, because he was a linguist, right? Yeah. So,
class.
And he inadvertently created, like, the ultimate fantasy
Nico,
classic.
Please don't bite that
Nico,
wire.
Nico, don't bite that wire, no!
That one's electric.
Yeah. But I think The Hobbit is a better book, just for your average non-fantasy fan like myself.
Yeah,
it's more accessible, it's tighter, like the characters are more fleshed out, because it is a children's story, essentially, so it's got a very like clear beginning, middle, and end, and it's easy to identify with the main character and stuff, whereas The Lord of the Rings doesn't really have that.
Well, Lord of the Rings is also huge.
Yeah, it's huge, right? And so many pages of singing and chanting, and I'm just like, no one has time for this shit.
And explaining
thing lore.
Yeah.
And there's, have you seen the appendices? There's it's like 50 pages.
I mean, there were points, I read that actually for the first time straight through, 2 years ago.
Oh, that and, recently, huh?
Yeah. I tried reading it when I was like 13 or something, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And then I just, the movies came out. And then I was kind of like, I don't need to read it now.
Did you get all the way through it then?
I did, when I read it like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay, right.
I had like a giant tome of all three books together.
Mm-hmm.
And there were parts where I would just like fall asleep and I was turning pages. I knew I was like,
now we gotta fight
like,
a cat.
Like reading it, but I was definitely asleep, like just going through stuff. And then I'd like go back the next day and kind of scan it, and I was like, "Well, I didn't need to read these pages." So
it's like Aragorn lifted up his voice,
skip 10 pages.
Yeah. Now we're back again. I used to only read it for the scenes with Legolas in it, because I had such a huge.
Oh, I love the scenes with Frodo and Sam. Mm. I love Frodo and Sam, not in like my usual. I love two men on the same page. Together, but I just love, and I've talked about this before, I love stories about people who look out for their friends and will do anything for their friends. But I liked how those scenes were written too, and like the emotion that Sam had behind that. But the other stuff with Aragorn.
What about Dean? No,
Sam and Dean and Aragorn and, Harry Potter.
What? I was like, yeah, what?
But the Aragorn scenes, like, every time Aragorn was on the page, I was like, I don't fucking care.
He is a pretty dull character.
Don't care.
Like, I mean, he's... Yeah, I mean...
Speaking of Aragorn, his names, his... What the pseudonym he used, what was it?
Strider.
Which is going back to Toda Natsuko, who actually translated.
Oh, that's right.
I mentioned it on like.
Did she translate that?
She actually translated what Strider meant, like for some reason. I love that look on your face.
I guess. You can kind of see why she did that. I mean, it'd be kind of clever to be like, I don't know, like Nagashi or something, like Long Legs or something.
Yeah,
because Strider in Japanese, if you put that in just Strider, like nobody knows what that means.
Yeah.
It doesn't get it across, right? But it's kind of an unessential piece of information.
Yeah.
Because,
like, does he take particularly long steps?
Well,
or?
It's called Longshanks as well, right? How do I know all this? Why? Right? I seriously haven't read The Lord of the Rings in, like, literally 15 years or something.
It's just Tony rubbing off on
you. I don't even know.
That sort of look of a bewilderment you have. Like, why do I know this?
No, but the other thing is, I mean, I'm really not into fantasy or sci-fi at all. So Tony and I have really different tastes in fiction. And you as well, you like fantasy, right? You like sci-fi.
I like science fiction better. But I like urban fantasy the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like
more of
American Gods, Supernatural, Buffy.
Set in the actual world, but with supernatural.
Yeah, that's so
sort of like modern fantasy.
Modern fantasy. Urban fantasy as well.
I like that too. Yeah. But I mean, my issue with a lot of fantasy and like what we're talking about Tolkien is the characters are not like real people.
Yeah.
They don't act like real people. They don't have believable inner lives, which is like the mark of a good novelist, right? Where your characters act like a real person would act and have a convincing inner life, right? Whereas in high fantasy like Tolkien, they're just like ciphers for the story. It doesn't really matter who they are. It's what they do that matters, right?
Yeah.
And how the plot moves on.
Yeah.
So it's not so much about their development as characters, it's just their plot.
Which is why I read almost exclusively like contemporary fiction, which Tony has like no patience for. He's like, this is a 300 page book and nothing happened. I'm like, what are you talking about? And like, it all happened internally, right? This cat is just, you just dropped him on the floor.
Nico.
He's so on face. Why is it that when we want to play, he doesn't want to play? He's like, no, I'm just going to watch myself.
But, I mean, fantasy and science fiction does that a lot. Mm-hmm. Science fiction, I think, does it more than fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just, like, a vehicle for the technology.
Yeah. And that's what I have no patience with, yeah.
Yeah, you just have to find the right stuff, I think. And I think the thing with fantasy is, my problem with it is more that it's very limited and it's very stuck in its own world and it's stuck in the Tolkien, like, influence. Mm-hmm. Elves and wizards and halflings and stuff like that.
It's all very, like, male-centric.
Yep.
The women are just incidental. I mean, obviously, Tolkien was kind of asexual and kind of a classic. In the classic, like, Oxbridge academic tradition, he didn't really have much time for women, and probably, I mean, if we, I think I read a biography of him somewhere, but probably in the modern day, he would have been probably gay, but just in the way that he didn't have any time for women. Like, he was not particularly sexual in either regard. He was just an academic who loved academia.
Yeah.
So you can tell that by, that's another thing that frustrated me about The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, to be honest. The women are just kind of incidental.
Yeah.
What I found interesting about The Hobbit, the third Hobbit movie, is that they added some stuff in that the, you know, they made Galadriel really powerful, and I don't think that scene happens in the book.
No.
I'm pretty sure.
No. I don't even think she showed up in the original.
Well, she shows up, and you think it's going to be, without wanting to spoil it, you think it's going to be a typical, like, women, damsel in distress, needs to be saved by Saruman and Gandalf. But she ends up kicking ass, like, you know, killing, banishing Sauron.
I'm
pretty sure this didn't happen.
No, I don't think. I mean, like, well, the whole thing with, like, the necromancer thing, that whole side plot was something. I think in the books it was like, well, in the book it was just like
page or something.
Yeah, well, it's like it was mentioned offhand,
right.
Like, and I did this stuff.
the fleshing out of Radagast the Brown with all the rabbits.
That was not.
Like, could we not?
Could we
this bird poop?
Oh,
well, I one thing I did appreciate was the added. As Sarah rolls laughing.
I love Radagast the Brown.
I did kind of
Doctor Who.
What?
A Doctor Who.
Oh, which one?
I forgot.
Tom?
Nope.
No, that's not Tom Baker, is it? No.
No, I the short one.
To the Google.
The one I knew.
But, it was kind of cliche, but I did kind of appreciate the sort of romance subplot in the second.
I was going to ask about that, because, like,
it's like,
that was really irritating.
Like, it felt like they added that just to add it, but it also added some character to it. So I'm kind of mixed on it. Like, it felt very cliche, kind of stupid, unnecessary, but at the same time, it let me care about some of the characters more.
The movie has no real, I mean, the problem with stretching it out over two, three hour movies.
It's not that much content.
I mean, the book is all about, the book is all about Bilbo's internal struggle, right? With the ring and with, you know, and the best scene in the book is him and Gollum.
Yeah.
Smeagol. I mean, that's so tense. It's really, it's an amazingly written scene. And in the movie, I thought they did a pretty good job. But then they're left with all this, basically the movie lacks heart because you're not reading Bilbo's thoughts, right, obviously. So they were like, right, what are we going to do to grab the women that have been dragged along to this movie? I'm just thinking of how a producer might think.
Like, yeah, well, it
right,
definitely felt that way.
In a romantic plot,
but so, like I said,
two species that hate each other.
Yeah,
I mean,
with the hot.
Well, it's the whole the forbidden love, the Romeo and Juliet
I'm
thing.
Sorry,
but
he's short deal breaker.
You know what? It was forbidden, but who really forbade it? Did the dwarves really have a
Thranduil
problem?
Thranduil looked kind of pissed.
Well,
off.
Thranduil always looks kind of pissed off. That bitch.
But, like,
he raised an eyebrow.
Bitch.
But, like, he's not coming in VIP.
Hair up her butt.
But
I don't think that's her natural hair color.
She's such a fake model.
Her eyebrows. Why are her eyebrows so dark?
I can't comment.
But
with dark eyes.
But like I was saying, like, I could appreciate that it added character to, like, the dwarves who are just like in the original, even in the original book, aside from, like, Thorin and, like, his advisor, everybody else was just like their name. It was a joke with their names,
because
like their names rhyme, and that was it.
It's
like they weren't, could might as well not have been there.
Bomber is fat. Bomber is fat. That's hilarious.
That's his character.
That's his character. No, but I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed about the movies. I think Peter Jackson should have challenged himself to make it into one really tight three-hour movie.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a much better movie.
Didn't somebody make a edit of it? Like a three-hour edit of it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think somebody...
I totally watched that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's... I haven't seen it, but I think it's totally worth the watch. But, if he had just made... I mean... Three movies was definitely pushing it.
Oh.
Two movies, it would work.
I thought it was two, and then I was like, wait, there's another one?
Yeah.
It originally was supposed to be two,
and
then they decided to expand it. Mm. I mean, that last movie, it was entertaining. I'm glad I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
But so much of that could have been cut out.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it could have been an hour.
Like I said, I was entertained, but I was expecting to be bored, because actually in a lot of the Lord of the Rings movies, especially the director's cut, oh, my God. Remember, Tony was like, let's marathon it. I was like, no. But so much of the Lord of the Rings, I was actually bored. And at least in the Hobbit movies, they were a lot more fast-paced.
How... Bring it sort of kicking and screaming back to Japan, but like, how many... Like, do you know any Japanese people who are really into?
I did.
I'm wondering, like, the Japanese opinion, because I haven't really heard all that much on The Hobbit. Mm. I do have one friend who's a massive Lord of the Rings fan. I think, I don't know if I mentioned this. If I did, I'm sorry, I'm going back over the same story, but, like, he hadn't read the original books, but he saw the first movie, he loved it, and Gandalf was his favorite character. He loved Gandalf. And then he dies! Like, in the first, spoilers, but he dies in the first movie, and just like, oh! And so, I for an entire year, I kept that running. Like, I did not tell him.
Good for you.
Yeah, and then we went and saw Harry Potter, and the very first, the trailer for it, they spoiled it. I was just like, fuck!
He just turns and looks at you and be like, I can't believe this.
I appreciate he loved the character so much, and it's just like, this will be a nice surprise for him, and just like,
in the trailer. You should have just like dived across and been like, no, don't look at it!
Yeah, it's just like, and I think it was like that trailer, it's like they're like going through the wood and they look up and then it's Gandalf, and I'm just like, oh
damn it. No, it's a different wizard in a white outfit. But yeah, like, should we talk about something Japan related to wrap up?
Well, actually, we have a question.
Oh, really?
Yes. A fan question. Just give me a second to bring it up.
This is so exciting.
Oh, goody.
This is super exciting. But keep talking.
Okay, dead air.
Just watching Stereotype Professor.
I made Kat watch Supernatural.
Which one, though?
Random. Okay, so, like, I have seen series one, episode one of Supernatural about 6 years ago.
Okay.
And I remember being like, this is good. You know, this is quite entertaining, and that one guy's super hot, Jensen.
Jensen Ackles.
Yeah. Oh my God, so hot. Ugh. So I remember watching that with like an ex boyfriend of mine who was like, "Yeah, this show's pretty good. You should watch it." I was like, "Okay." So I watched series one, episode one. I was kind of entertained, but then I just never picked up with it. And then the other day, we were up really late, and Sarah was like, "I know, let's watch Supernatural." And I was like, "Okay." So I was in quite an acquiescing mood. So I was like, "All right." So she shows me this random episode that's like from series what?
Ten.
And it's not even, she's like not even showing me the whole episode. She just skipped through to her favorite bits.
What the?
The one where what happens? He tries to exorcise him or something.
It's where Sam, well, Castiel, to be specific, cures Dean of being a demon.
Oh, okay.
And Dean's chasing Sam around.
Oh, okay. It's the Shining one.
Sammy. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, Sarah, I didn't realize they had Texan accents. I feel like a huge thing for like Southern accents myself. And like, pretty much all the Americans I've spoken to have been like, really? We hate Southern accents.
But he doesn't have a really strong
Texan
accent.
But I can hear it, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm so down for watching this now. They fulfilled like two of my hotness. So I was like, all right, so I didn't really get the plot of the episode, but I was like, all I got from that was like, this guy's super hot. Okay, I'm gonna watch it. Because you like kept skipping through, and you're like, no, this isn't relevant. And I'm like, I haven't seen any of this show.
Castiel's boring.
I'm like sitting there on the couch going like, what the hell is happening?
I think it's not a matter of it's not relevant, that like it's actually super relevant, but it ties into so much other
series
stuff.
Series 10.
Yeah.
Like, no, so. It was boring. It was Cass and
A girl whose name we've completely forgotten because she was so insane.
Everything I know about Supernatural, I have learned from Sarah talking about it and things on Facebook that she and you and Scott, like the other guys into Supernatural, that they post.
Yeah.
So I know quite a lot about it, and I know who the major fan pairings are. Like, and I know the vague arc of it, and I know that nobody likes anything in the first few seasons.
About the major pairings, that actually only really comes up in the series in one episode, which was like the 200.
I think it comes up across.
Well,
in mentioning
it by name.
No, I'm talking about I know like which characters are paired off with who and what the dynamic is meant to be, because Sarah has read Supernatural fan fiction to me.
when I was like in out bed loud? On Sunday morning.
She's like, no, you read it.
Oh, I read it, right? She comes. Yeah, we were all staying over at the same place and like we wake up and I was just like, I just find them. What? I don't know why. What happened.
It was like the most horrific fan fiction.
It was so stupidly.
No, it wasn't. It was J2 fan fiction.
What's that?
Jensen and Jared.
Oh, okay, J2.
Which is even worse.
And it was like one of them got pregnant or something.
No, it was like, it was so stupid.
Oh God,
they were cheating. One of them was cheating on the other one, and the other one walked in.
Can we not? That was so bad. I just couldn't. My eyes felt like they'd been burned.
But I was reading it mostly for like Tony's reaction because he was there too, and he was just like his face.
Tony hates it.
He just hates it because you talk about it so much.
I know. And that makes me so sad.
No,
all the time.
He never says he doesn't.
He doesn't. He says he...
Should I call him right now?
He also said I should stop being a bitch.
To be fair. That was probably good advice at the time.
Yes, call Tony right now.
Tony, do you hate Supernatural?
Yeah.
You question.
Question. What's your fan question?
Okay.
Let's get off Supernatural.
This is not about Supernatural.
Okay, good.
This is from Eli.
Oh, okay.
And I just bumped all the microphones.
It's
all
right.
Okay. I wanted to ask you both... and special guest.
Oh, yeah, right.
about some of the stereotypes about Japan or Japanese culture that you see in media, TV, films, music, news, etc., that piss you off the most. Also, on the flip side, what are some of the Japanese stereotypes of Americans and American culture you see portrayed in Japan media that tick you off as well? Would love to hear you guys discuss. Thanks.
So that's an interesting question.
That is. Do you want to go first, or should I? Or
talk about this forever?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is quite a deep subject, but the stereotypes of Japan in Western media. Mm. I mean, these are kind of like as old as dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the whole geisha girl thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, we should probably talk more modern pop culture.
Well, it's kind of hard to... My exposure to like stereotypes of Japan now is mostly through tourists that come and have certain opinions about how things are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only here for a couple of weeks or something, and they're like... So the things that... I guess the things that bother me is... Especially now that I'm kind of an embittered expat. Like, it's more like people coming and only seeing the good side and trying to tell me that I'm wrong. Because I'm like, well, you know, it is a good country, but... Like with every country, there's some negatives. And these people just want to, especially the ones who are like crazy about anime and stuff and are just like total Japan otaku.
People who think they've learned, they know everything because they've seen,
Right. And I'm like, well, you haven't lived here and you don't speak the language and you have never really talked to Japanese people, right?
I've been here 2 weeks.
I've been here two weeks, so, and I'm super in touch with the culture and it's like, bite me, God. They come and they're like, and I say, they're like, oh, Japanese people are super friendly. And I'm like, it's like one of the most unfriendly countries in the planet. I mean, people are polite, which is different.
Yeah.
So if you say to them, well, actually, you know, and of course I never say this to tourists I meet in bars. I'm like, well, actually, your nice impression of Japan is totally wrong. But in my mind, I'm thinking, well, it's not really the case. And it's just annoying to be told, like, you know, asked sometimes, like, how come you hang out with foreigners when you live in Japan? And I'm like, oh, son, let me tell you. And it's like, well, you know, it's actually kind of hard to make real Japanese friends if you're not willing to be treated like a pet, like an English-speaking toy or a pet or a mascot. It's actually kind of hard to connect with people even if you speak Japanese fluently.
Yeah.
Because the culture is so different. And it's weird because you kind of go through this... I went through this period of like, oh, no, I am integrated in Japanese culture. And then I came out of that and was like, actually, no, the more I understand, the less I feel in touch with it.
It's, I mean, Japan is a master at subtle racism.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, the Japanese culture is, like, because we don't have that aggressive, maybe against Korea, but we don't really have that aggressive, like, sort of, like, you know, blacks only water cooler sort of thing. We don't have that blatant... straight up, but it is very subtle, but it's very omnipresent.
Well, it's that word that gained traction recently called microaggressions, where little things that rub on you every day and wear you down. And it's like,
so like today, oh yeah, today I had a lunch, and this is a very common question, especially for women. I don't know if men get this, but it was all Japanese people, and the women were asking me, what do you make for dinner? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not a cook. I'll make like stir fry vegetables. I like tofu and egg and stuff like that. And they were like, wow, really? Do you make Japanese food? I'm like, well, I can read the package of the seasoning. And they're like, oh, do you have a rice cooker? Do you make rice? And it just baffled them that I did that, and like that's their stereotype of white people, of Americans, is that we sit around and I don't know what do they expect? Hamburgers and
or sandwiches, exclusively and stuff like that. I used to get those questions too in the Japanese office. They'd be like, "What do you?" They're fascinated because they're like, "What do you cook?" And that comes from like, you know, media stereotypes of foreigners only eating hamburgers and stuff. So they are legitimately curious, like, what do you cook? And, you know, I was just saying to Sarah when she told me this today, do you cook Japanese food? And I'm like, well, if you mean kaiseki, like the super complex, like Kyoto style, like 12 courses, no. Do you cook kaiseki every night? Like, you know, I can make okonomiyaki, but, you know, I don't make it all the time. Because actually that links in really nicely too. Another stereotype that annoys me abroad about Japan is that Japanese food is all really healthy. It is not. It is not.
Karage.
Fredjian, like, extremely carb heavy. Almost everything has rice or noodles in it. Even sushi is not particularly good for you. I mean, it's a bowl of rice. I mean, sashimi is healthy, but people don't eat that very often because it's expensive.
And if you, like, douse it in soy sauce, that's not good.
I mean, heart disease is the number one killer of Japanese people because the salt intake is so high.
High blood pressure.
So that really pisses me off when people are like, Japanese food is so healthy. And I'm like, almost everybody I know moving here, yes, we walk a lot in Tokyo, and yes, there's a lot of stairs, and yes, the portions are smaller, but the food itself is not particularly good. In terms of, like, health content.
Yeah. Just, like, beef and pork, it's, like, mostly fat. Japanese taste is that, and chicken, that should have fat and skin on it, which is, like, the bad parts of the meat.
I have to say, though, oh, my God, the Wagyu, the steak here is just incredible. Like, I had a steak that I supposedly went to New York recently and had supposedly some of the best steak that New York had to offer. I was like, this is trash compared to the Wagyu I had in Japan. So
there's a reason why Kobe beef is really
expensive. Yeah, I love the teppanyaki here. So fucking good. But people who come over and expect everybody to be eating like monk style tofu vegetables and raw fish, like most people don't eat like that.
No.
Most people eat
like people
like people in any big city. People will eat convenience store food. You know, rice ball onigiri are not particularly good for you because they're just a ball of rice and it's
they've got like a bit of seasoning on
it. Right. And the Japanese government desperately trying to convince everyone that everything you heard about low carb is wrong. White rice is really good for you, and I'm like, it's really not. So that's one thing that annoys me when people say it,
For me, like, I think it goes, like, well, what I dislike about, stereotypes of Japanese in American culture and stereotypes of Western culture, Japanese, it's the same thing. It's just, like, the misconception, that sort of broad paintbrush is always, that's wrong.
Right.
That is, like, so wrong in so many ways that, like, because it just, like, you get maybe a general idea, but that's not the whole picture.
Right.
Like, both cultures are extremely complex, and they try to, like, paint them, their depictions are always so narrow.
What bothers me, though, is that in the West, I say the West in a really broad term, but, you know, it's not acceptable to ask certain questions or like to portray like Japanese people on TV like they did in the 60s, like, you know, with like the whole slanty eyed, you know, eating raw fish all the time, like talking with like buck teeth type, you know, really racist stereotypes. But the thing is, it's kind of still okay to do that on Japanese TV. And that is the kind of thing that bothers me. And the only way that that's going to change is with more exposure.
Yeah. And Japan is a very closed culture, so it's not, I don't see it getting that exposure very quickly.
One of the campaigns for the 2020 Olympics and like getting people to come to Japan as tourists is they're using Japanese celebrities speaking in Japanese, saying like, "Hello, we are so and so. Please come to Japan." And like I read an article recently that was criticizing that, saying nobody outside Japan knows who these people are. You might as well just have some random person saying, "Come to Japan."
In fact, it would work better, like as an ad campaign, to have random people on the street being like, you know, Vox Populi kind of thing, being interviewed, going, you know, being like, "Hi, welcome to Tokyo, come to Tokyo," kind of thing. That would be way more accessible. It would be the equivalent of like interviewing random New Yorkers and being like, "Hey, come to New York, it's great." You know, who the hell cares who these comedians are, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's actually one thing I've always, this is going a bit off on a tangent, but the fact that like in America, well, in the West, like there's a definite line between TV stars and movie stars. It's very hard to cross that line.
Yeah,
like absolutely. Like someone like Bryan Cranston, who's amazing on Breaking Bad, only gets like these minor roles in movies and stuff like that. It's just like, but in Japan, that line is very blurred.
Yeah.
I mean, you see celebrities in movies all the time. They sometimes shoehorn them into such an annoying extent. Like, I've seen movies where like, they have a quote-unquote celebrity or a talent in the movie, but he is a talent who is very much of his time. Like he was like a flash in the pan. He had a gag that was very popular, but it stuck in that time.
Yeah.
So like that movie is now dead because it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And while I wish that in the West, like that line would get blurred more, like because our TV has become like. It's become in many ways better than movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like they can tell a very intricate, very complex, and a good developing story on TV, and they have great actors and stuff like that. I'd love to see a lot more of those people in movies.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when movie actors go on TV. And his name's escaping me now, but Kaiser Soze when he's in House of Cards.
Oh, Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey, he's amazing in that. It's great, and like and. I'd love to see that line blurred in the West, but in Japan, I'd like to see that line a little more firmer.
I mean, there's such a smaller pool of talent here as well, because
that is true.
In the West, as we keep calling it, you're drawing from like all the English speaking countries there are.
Yeah.
And of course, America's massive, right?
Yeah.
But I agree with you. And also, like, the whole Japanese concept of tarento, talent and celebrities that are famous for nothing. It's just like, you're not funny and you're not clever. Why are you on TV?
Yeah, so they like, they have like kind of panel shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have like the person's name and underneath it'll be their profession. It'll be like comedian and lawyer. It's like, what the fuck?
How do you
get this job?
I don't know if it's still a thing in the West now, but like they used to talk about how in Japan, like they have, in Japan, they have professional game show contestants.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that like professional game show contestants, it's just that they're in every fucking game show. Like the game shows in Japan are not, you don't get regular citizens in game shows in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They're always these talents. And the entertainment value is in their interaction. It's not about like the money that's won. It's not about how much they know. It's their interactions, and that's the entertainment.
I find that really interesting. It's so culturally different.
Yeah.
Because we as Westerners like to see common like ordinary people like either win or lose, right?
Or like to see how smart they are, or to see what they can do.
And there's pleasure in both outcomes, because seeing ordinary people fail is like a really Schadenfreude type thing, where human beings love to see other people fail, right? Particularly Brits love that. Don't like anyone succeeding. It's like one of the worst things about being British is like British people hate a hero. Like we like people, we don't like anyone getting above their station. We like people to like maybe achieve some success, but then kind of fail. Traditionally,
there's
got to
be a balance.
Americans love the whole like
the
ordinary person winning,
yeah.
Right? It's kind of interesting.
So is that why Bilbo's so popular? Because he's kind of a normal guy and he has some success, and then he just goes back to the Shire.
Yeah, that's so
a book.
That is so English, right? Because I mean, he doesn't really his life doesn't change. Yeah, right.
Mm.
If you think about it like that, that's a good link to what we were talking about before.
All comes. Full circle.
Full circle. Like the ring.
But, I mean...
Going back to, like, the question...
Stereotypes, yeah.
So we talked a bit about... Well, we talked about stereotypes of Japan in the Western main. And, of course, there's the really... I mean, you're ethnically Japanese. I mean, is there a really annoying thing about, like, Japanese people are all robotic, you know, with no emotion, and like they, you know, they never have sex. That article that went gained traction a few months ago, it was like, Japanese people don't have sex, aren't having sex anymore. Young people aren't having sex anymore.
And there are
anymore.
New ones like that yeah. coming up.
It was a really popular topic.
Really?
Magazine yeah. articles. Yeah. I just saw it on Facebook a lot.
Yeah.
Wow. I missed that completely.
Yeah. And it was just like, well, this is now a really popular topic in the media about how young Japanese people aren't having sex. And I'm like,
I wouldn't be surprised if that was something that was actually enforced by the Japanese government because they want more, because the population is decreasing. Yeah, they want...
You know, they probably, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to, like, put up the price of condoms, like, to ridiculous levels. They're already expensive, but they'll probably make them more expensive. Be like, ha, you can't afford birth control. May as well just have a child, which is way cheaper, as we all know. But, Sarah, well, I mean, I think we've probably talked about this, like, multiple times on... When I was on, I think we definitely talked about it, but stereotypes of foreigners here, I mean, I could go on for days. Yeah. Like, one of the things that you talk to people who have been in Japan for a significant amount of time and then leave, almost exclusively, they're just like, I'm tired of being treated like a mascot or
a child.
Yeah, people expecting me to react a certain way. One minor thing that just kind of encapsulates it for me is every time I go out, I'll get a Japanese person, usually a guy, trying to high-five me. Just because they think that's a Western thing to do.
Yeah.
And I take so much pleasure in leaving them hanging and just like looking at them like, no, I'm not going to high-five you. And they always like, I thought foreigners high-fived, huh? Kind of thing.
And tourists will do it because they're like, oh, look at this crazy Japanese guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like,
especially Australians. Sorry.
So, I mean, yeah, I think we've talked about it before, but it's more being treated like half a person kind of gets old after a while. Depressed.
And the first part of that question, Japanese stereotypes or stereotypes of Japanese people in Japan in the media. Like, I mean, we haven't lived in the West in a while, but I mean, Avril Lavigne and Gwen Stefani, and then like Katy Perry wearing the like kimono kind of thing.
Oh, right.
Those types of things.
Aren't helping.
I can see how that bothers people. And like with Gwen Stefani, she's bringing back her Harajuku girls. Mm. So she kind of went away for a bit. Now the Harajuku girls are back. And they're just background decoration for her. And that's like, people criticize that as that's the stereotype of Japanese women, that they're just ornaments and they're in the background and they're just there to support the white woman. And that's said a lot about people of color in the U.S.
Well,
especially.
It's like Taylor Swift using like hip hop dancers just to like be background decoration, right? And it's like she's the whitest person ever to white.
Yeah.
Including myself.
Yeah.
But I think another, just linking to that Harajuku thing is the concept of like Harajuku being the epicenter of everything cool in Tokyo, whereas a lot of Tokyo people think that Harajuku is kind of weird and they don't go there. I mean, it's like how I think a lot of anime fans abroad think that anime is like some kind of shared cultural thing in Japan, whereas it's a very niche thing here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is something people are aware of but it's like comic books.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody has read, I mean, even in Japan, it's a thing that kids are into, right? And if, as an adult, you know, particularly actually as a grown woman, if you admit that you're super into anime / manga, people are going to have a certain image of you and they're going to judge you. So people don't really talk about it.
No.
It's not something you go and broadcast to the world. Right. And you would never call yourself otaku.
No.
I mean, that's like calling yourself, I'm a stinky nerd, hi. Like,
I'm a neckbeard.
It's not a good thing at all. And it's not something that people broadcast to anybody.
It's only something you say if you don't care.
Right. And if your other friends are otaku too.
Yeah. If you're among
people with common interests.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody reads, I think it's not shameful to read manga now and again. I think a lot of people do. But being too into anything here is kind of not okay. Yeah.
Well, being too into anything anywhere is kind of like, you know, like, I mean, being too,
work, yes.
Like being into like way too much into Supernatural is kind of creepy and just like.
No, it's okay to listen to it. It's fine. But you know, people.
I'm like sitting here with my laptop, and all I could think about was I feel like Sam right now.
I'm laughing, but I don't get the reference.
Just like holding a laptop and like
Google
Wi-Fi.
Google something.
take a look at this.
Which, that's not very same way, because your laptop is plugged in. Oh, but,
right. Right, and we have to be in the car, and the Wi-Fi has to be working.
But,
anyway.
Actually, I think, kind of going a little bit back to something I was talking about earlier, I think a really good depiction of Japan, or at least Japanese culture, was actually Big Hero 6, where it wasn't really...
Yeah. Is it set in Japan?
It's set in this imaginary city called San Francisco, which is a mix of San Francisco and Tokyo.
And the kid's called Hero, right?
Yes. The but they don't really parade the fact that he's Japanese, or the fact that there is a lot of Japanese stuff in it, but they don't parade that, they don't show it like, look, it's Japanese!
Right, right.
But it's there, and it feels very natural, and it's not in your face.
Mm.
There's one moment in the very beginning where, like, okay, I'm kind of spoiling the beginning, but the main character Hero is really good with robotics. He's built his own fighting robot, and they have these underground, like, robot fighting turtles. It's not giant robots. It's like small, tiny robots, but that they fight each other. But, like, his first, like, he's fighting against a guy named Yama.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy Yama is, when I first saw it, was watching the movie, I was kind of worried, uh-oh, is this going to go stereotypical?
Yeah, right. Is he, like, a big guy? Like,
yeah, he's a very large guy, and is it going to go, like, the broken speech, the sort of...
Yeah, right.
Sort of sumo wrestler imagery.
Mind a few words type thing, yeah.
Or are they going to go that way? But they don't.
Oh,
so,
good. Huh.
Yeah, if you want a good example of, actually, of Japanese culture, watch Big Hero 6, because...
You know, another good example I just remembered was you saying Big Hero reminded me Heroes, with the character Hiro.
Yeah.
And his friend, Ando.
Yeah. Although Ando was not Japanese.
He wasn't, but his Japanese was better than Hiro's. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Was he Korean-American or something?
I believe so.
And his Japanese was so much better than Hiro's. Like, listening to it, you're just like,
I think, well, here's an interesting thing. Have you heard, actually, like, the character, what's his name, Masa, something like that, but, like, the guy who plays Hiro, his actual Japanese is not bad at all. It's actually really good. The reason I think it was broken and, like, kind of, because he was emoting in English, like, he was speaking English-Japanese.
That's like, so weird, because I remember listening to him speak Japanese and thinking, this guy is, because he's Japanese-American, right?
Yeah, but, and I've actually heard, like, because he was at a convention, it was like, can you actually speak Japanese? Or something like that. Some guy asked him, and he just went right into Japanese.
Do you think he got better after the show?
I don't know. But, like, I
think,
like,
he was, like, one of those people who was raised here, but went to, like, international school or something. I don't know.
But listening to him in that interview, like, at that convention, like, he's perfectly fluent.
Both of them were better than George Takei.
Oh, yeah.
But, yes, definitely. But, like, I don't know. I get the feeling that it was the direction.
Huh.
The direction he was given, they told him, like, a way to say it. Say it like this, or the way he was emoting the emotion.
You think the director is obviously an American guy? He's like, okay, I need you to emphasize this, and obviously Japanese is not like
Japanese,
that.
No. Right. As a language, Japanese is very different.
You don't emphasize certain words. Because I remember thinking, wow, he is, what's the word, the tone of the speech is just like listening to English, because it's like, Japanese is not like that, right?
I get the feeling that, like, because, like, as I'm saying, like, when the guy asks him, he breaks right, so this now, Nahiro, he goes right into Japanese.
Dude!
Like,
Nihongo shabere!
So, apparently he spent the first 6 years of his life in Japan, and then was raised in California.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Maybe he got better.
Yeah, his parents are Japanese.
Hmm.
I mean, the guy who played Ando definitely got better over the series.
He did. I love that. I'm going to watch that again. I never finished Heroes, actually, because I just got kind of bored.
I heard it got really bad.
It got really bad.
No.
It's one of those series that definitely suffered from the writer's strike.
Yeah.
The first season is, I like, it's the best.
Mm,
it is really good.
Yeah, the first season was really gripping. I really liked that. We've gone
for about
2 hours now, right?
Well, an hour and a half.
An hour and a half.
Okay, well, just to...
So I hope that answered Eli's question.
I hope so.
Kind of rambling.
A bit, but I think we hopefully answered it.
Well, to wrap up, I think that, like, there's stereotypes on both sides, but the frustrating thing for us here is that you see, media improving in terms of as soon as there's an offensive racial caricature on American TV, it will be called out. People will be like, you cannot do that anymore. And there will be an apology. You'll be like, okay, we won't do that anymore. That was inappropriate.
They've actually started doing that in Japan too. Now.
Really?
So, like, they had a, I think,
the ANA commercial.
Thank you. Yeah. The ANA commercial.
That's so annoying.
Yes. And people pointed that out, and that got pulled quick.
That got pulled, yeah. Right? Because it was aimed at, I mean, ANA obviously has a huge, it's an international company.
Yeah.
What was that again? Was that the...
So, it was the guy who was wearing, like, a nose prosthetic or something.
Yeah, so he was, like, he had blonde hair, it was a Japanese guy, blonde hair, nose prosthetic, maybe blue contacts, I don't remember, and he goes, but I am Japanese.
That's right.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Literally, it was the equivalent of, like, doing blackface, except pretending to be Caucasian.
Yeah.
Oh, and the whole foreign community was like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah, and like, even Japanese people were just like, that's a little bit...
Right. I mean, you're kind of glad when people do react like that, and you're like, okay, well, it's not just like our bitter like foreign community that's like, hey, you shouldn't do that. When Japanese people are like, yeah, that's kind of fucked up, then you're like, okay, thank you, that's good.
So like now the big tourism campaign has a Japanese woman, a young Japanese woman, and a young white woman, and they're kind of like... in different historical spots,
that's
like around
JR
Japan.
Thing, right?
Yeah, that's JR. So that's like the big tourist campaign with foreigners in it. And I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I was kind of, I put this on Instagram just like, just because I was like, yay. I was like kind of obviously doing this ironically, but I was like, yay, JR, Japan Rail supports gay rights, because it was like a picture of this white woman. A white girl holding hands with this Japanese girl, and they were like walking down a road together, and I was like, they're a couple. But everybody's like, no they're not. I was like,
they're just tomodachi,
they're just friends. But yeah, can I plug my Instagram on here,
please?
Because I only post pictures of Japanese things that I think are usually adorable or like weird, so anybody who's into Japan might find it amusing. I don't post a ton, but I post once a day. My username is I can't even pronounce it myself. Uigu, which is UIGGU at Uigu. So yeah, follow me, and I will post Japan things for you.
Awesome. So I think that about wraps up this episode. Kind of, I guess we kind of talked about Disney and and movies and
segued into the Lord of the Rings for a while there.
That was a lot of fun. anything else you want to talk about or plug?
Nope. Apart from my Instagram, which I plugged already.
Well, Bloody Knockers, going to be coming out on YouTube.
Bloody Knockers,
we're not sure when, but
maybe by the time this gets out.
Yeah, if you Google it on YouTube, if you search it on YouTube,
we do have a Tumblr actually. I think it's Bloody Knockers, but let me just check really quickly. Somebody else talk.
dead air. But
it's been a while since the last podcast, right?
Yeah. Well, we have now the. There are now three podcasts which go a week. So it used to be once every other week, and now it's once every three weeks.
Okay. So it's bloodyknockers.tumblr.com.
Bloody Knockers, all one word?
Yep, Bloody Knockers, all one word.
Knockers with a K.
That's...
I know, but just... some people don't know how... Some people really cannot spell.
There's a GIF of me. I've been made into a GIF. That's the high point of my life. I can end it
GIF
now.
Me. GIF me.
GIF me. So we'll probably get information up on that.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, so this has been the Wayward Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Wayward Podcast, or you can email us.
waywardpodcast@gmail.com.
We're part of the One of Us Net World of Us cast on One of Us Net. I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Kat.
And we'll catch you next time. Oh, wait, hold on a sec. We don't have an outro song.
Yeah, pick a song.
Oh, I have to pick a song?
Yes. It has to be Japanese.
Oh, God, it has to be Japanese? Make it
yes.
Kawaii. Oh, jeez. Make it kawaii. I don't know.
Fap.
I don't know. God, I have already Japanese music on my phone.
Wow.
What did I do last time? Did I do Shinoringo last time?
Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. I actually remember that you did.
Yeah, I just remembered that.
Yep.
Let's do a 1OK Rock song.
Oh, okay, another one. Cool.
I almost met them the other night.
Oh, really?
Almost. They were at a they played a concert with Yellow Card, which a band I don't really care about. Sorry. Yellow Card. But 1OK
they were nice, though.
1OK Rock I do really like.
Yes.
And they supported Yellow Card, apparently. So Yellow Card came to this bar we were at after, but 1OK Rock were really Japanese and went home, apparently.
Oh.
Or to somewhere more Japanese, I don't know. But anyway, let's play one of their songs.
Okay.
You guys talk while I try
okay.
We can put it in later.
Yes. We've already Just, I don't know, we've already run Clock Strikes, so can't choose that one. But anyways.
Dead air. So...
Oh, they're planning on... Do you know... Okay, have either of you watched Evangelion?
Yeah, Evangelion.
Okay,
yeah.
You remember that Lance of Longinus?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
There's Where actually a... it's not a Kickstarter, per se, but it's a crowdfunding project.
They're going to fire it into the
moon. Yeah, they're going to launch it and stick it into the moon.
Oh, my God, that is so cool. I'm the biggest Evangelion fan, but I think that's awesome.
I think they're at, like, 40% of their goal, so...
Let's do...
Okay.
Let's do a song called Yume.
Okay.
By what?
By One OK Rock. Let's do that.
Alrighty.
That's very Natsukashi, like, I listened to that when I was in my late teens.
Alrighty. And so this has been the Wayward Podcast. Again, I'm Toki.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Kat.
And we'll catch you next time. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight.